Saturday Morning Wrestling is brought to you today by Loot Crate, your source of epic gamer gear and other items. LootCrate.com. Use the code PWTORCH to save $3 off your first order. And by FanEssentials.net, your source for merchandise for your favorite NBA team.
One lady and one man is finally interested in that Dusty Rhodes and Baby Doll. Dusty.
You know, Bob, Kyle, throughout this country, the Great American Bash is a fever pitch. The Nature Boy Ric Flair comes out here and he talks about the many great things that is before him, 14 of the greatest competitors in the world. Nature Boy, the only man to ever walk into Hemsley Palace with a t-shirt and jeans on while everybody else was standing in line to get in. And they said, yes, sir, Mr. Rhodes, come and sit down. That's the American dream, Dusty Rhodes. That's the...
Good morning, wrestling fans around the world and here in the United States. This is Pat McNeil filling in for Jim Valley on Saturday Morning Wrestling. Hello, you people. We're going to be spending the next, almost an hour talking about wrestling nostalgia and some current wrestling stuff here. And I am joined today by a very special guest. He is an announcer for Ring of Honor, specifically does a lot of work on the Women of Honor, if you get to see any of that on YouTube, and has been a guest on the live cast and on my podcast on occasions. Please welcome, hold on a moment, I need the right musical cue here. Well, anyway, it's going to do. Please welcome Mr. Ian Riccoboni. Hold on, there we go.
To introduce our guest.
That's more like it. How you doing, Ian?
Hey, Pat. I'm doing really, really well. I'm really pumped because I heard the old Superstars theme. And, man, did that bring up a lot of memories. Wow.
Both good and bad, yeah.
Yeah, Honky Tonk Man versus Sam Houston. That was, for some reason, that was the first thing that came to mind, but.
Wow, that stuck out, huh?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was very very big in my impressionable mind growing up. So.
Okay. So the number for those of you looking to call in and talk to us is hold on a moment. There's a new number and there's a lot of fives in it, so I'm going to try to. This is going to take a while to bring up. Anyway, our topics today are we decided in honor of Backlash that we would be taking a look at B shows. If you know what a B show is, it's when you go to a show and the A crew from whatever promotion you like is not there, and you're getting some wrestlers who perhaps haven't won as many titles or seen as many main events, and those can oftentimes be fun. And another topic we're going to look at is all the stuff that got added to WWE Network this week, including the Last Battle of Atlanta. And Ian, I hate to admit it, but you know, at the time the Last Battle of Atlanta was taking place, I'm pretty sure that I was one of the people who thought Jimmy Snuka versus Don Morocco was as big as it gets. So I'm going to be looking to you for some guidance here. Yeah, but anyway, and Bruce Mitchell, I know, plans to cover it in detail on one of his future audios.
I grew up in Allentown, so you know, Philadelphia, Morocco, Snuka, for us that was as big as it gets. So you know, it was cool to go back about 33 years later and then kind of relive all of the amazing Last Battle of Atlanta stuff. So
right, okay. The phone number for people calling in 515-605-9345. Also, the chat room is open. I know people. I know some of you listeners are surprised when the chat room's open during one of these shows, but it does happen here. I can check email, but I don't know how many we're going to get, and I'll try to check on Twitter in a minute at Real Pat McNeil. But that's what we're going with here today. Just a lot of stuff that got dumped here on the network. I might just have to pull up the network here and look at it. You know, one which I'm hoping to get to, which I haven't gotten to yet, is Lou Thesz against Ray Gunkel, which while it's not exactly the Last Battle of Atlanta, Ray Gunkel was involved in a battle of Atlanta at some point before that. And let's see, and Bob Backlund versus Harley Race, which that's going to be interesting. Them going about I think over a half hour there.
Yeah, and you know it's. A lot of the appearance of this stuff on the WWE Network is exciting for longtime fans like myself. I wasn't exactly a tape trader, but
right.
You know, I did try and accumulate all of the things that I could growing up on tape. And you would go to these different baseball card shows or events that might have folks selling wrestling figures or memorabilia. And so anytime that I found something that wasn't from the Philadelphia or New York area, it was so exciting. And I'm getting that feeling again when all the stuff gets put on there. And it gives us hope that some of the other, you know, kind of holy grails of pro wrestling might actually eventually turn up. And because I personally thought the last Battle of Atlanta was gone. It didn't exist. I mean, it's been 33 years. I follow some of the other, like, lost media, whether it be films or records or things like that, and rarely do you find what you're actually looking for, as stupid as that sounds. But so this is just an amazing development, and I think it lived up to the hype. I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and some of the other stuff that's on here, I wouldn't call it so much hidden gems. It's stuff that you knew existed, Bret Hart versus Terry Funk from one of Funk's retirement shows, and let's see, another one. The Undertaker versus Unabomb from Smoky Mountain. But it's just, you know, it's amazing. It's still amazing to see them, you know, in their in as close to their original condition as you're going to get.
Right, and I think that was the most amazing thing about WWE Network when it first launched was I remember going to the video stores and running the Wrestling Classic and Survivor Series 87 or 88.
Oh, yeah.
And by the time I was seeing those, they were already a few years old, and the tapes had been played over and over and over again, and you wouldn't get great quality. So that's, as the nerd in me is also just routinely amazed by what's on there. And how nice of quality it's in, because it's coming from the masters in a lot of cases.
Well, we're going to take a break here. When we come back, we'll be talking a lot more nostalgia and a lot more wrestling. Go ahead and call someone and place a call yourself while you're at it, 515-605-9345. We'll take a break, and we will be right back after this timeout.
If you're like me, you've got a list of your favorite podcasts that you listen to throughout the week, and also your favorite websites that you listen to throughout the week, but they don't always overlap. But in the case of PW Torch, they do. We hope not only will you listen to the PW Torch livecast every day, but also visit pwtorch.com every day for the latest insider perspective, breaking news, TV reports, live event reports, live pay-per-view coverage, exclusive editorials, and a wide range of other features. Check it out every day. It's mobile-friendly, desktop and laptop-friendly. Stay up to the minute, stay up to date with pwtorch.com.
All right, and we're back with more Saturday Morning Wrestling here on the PW Torch livecast, joined by Ian Riccoboni of Ring of Honor. Ian, before we settle down to business, let's talk about some old business. A lot of big shows for Ring of Honor in the month of August, including the one in Brooklyn, and that's up on video on demand right now. What was your favorite part of the past few weeks here?
Oh, geez, it's been a whirlwind. You know, being with the stars of New Japan is something that I kind of never imagined would happen to me, just because of physical distance and things like that. I know with Ring of Honor, we're the best wrestling on the planet, but that relationship has been amazing because it's opened up opportunities for not only the wrestlers, but for commentators like myself, Kevin Kelly, Steve Corino. Kevin and Steve go over and call some of the larger live events with New Japan, which has been amazing.
Yes.
And they do a great job. And, for me to be able to kind of interact with some of the New Japan talents and to, you know, be involved in some of those matches as well has just been a dream come true. And the big thing for me, though, the thing that I'm most proud of is that Field of Honor, we had our very first ever Women of Honor match at a Field of Honor event. And for me to kind of see the seed planted about a year ago or a little over a year ago, and then for it to have grown to have a television special, the most watched Ring of Honor video on YouTube, video on demand special, a live event, Women of Honor only in Baltimore, it's just incredible. And we keep adding and at a very nice natural pace of how Women of Honor is growing. So, you know, while it's amazing and it's always awesome to be in the same room as Tanahashi and Jay Briscoe, Jay Lethal, things like that, and to be able to call some of that action, to me, the thing that I'm most excited about is the Women of Honor and how fast and nicely that has grown into something that people are excited about. So for me, I mean, you know, pay-per-view, you can, that's terrific, but just to be out there with the Women of Honor has been something else.
Mm-hmm. I can understand that. Some very talented women there. Let's go to the telephones. We're going to kick things off in the 704 area code. 704, please state your name and town. You're on Saturday Morning Wrestling. Hello.
Hey, Pat. It's Brian in Charlotte. How you doing?
Doing good, Brian. How are you?
I'm good. When you first brought up the topic of the Battle of Atlanta, I got real excited, but we might be on different trajectories because, to me, the last Battle of Atlanta was Tommy Rich versus Buzz Sawyer in what I think was the first enclosed cage match in NWA history. And it was just – I remember the build-up to that match being just so strong, and I think it was the highlight of both guys' careers. So I was wondering if you were still thinking of that also or just the WWE product.
That is actually what's up on WWE Network, that match, the last battle in Atlanta in the Hidden Gems area. So, we are going to be talking about that.
Excellent. Well, what
memories do you have of it, Brian?
I just remember that I was a high school kid. I remember the build-up to the match. I remember that everybody just wanted to see Tommy Rich just absolutely destroy Buzz Sawyer. And then, you know, I live in Charlotte, so I didn't get a chance to go to the Omni, but I just remember hearing about what a bloodbath it was and what a great match it was and how it just really drained both of the guys, but it was really one of the highlights for the Georgia territory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and part of the appeal of it is that it was, you know, Georgia Championship Wrestling at the time, that was on TBS, and it was getting viewed, you know, across the country for those people who actually had cable back then.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now go ahead,
Brian. Can I ask? Have you been able to watch it yet? And if you have, is it something that, you know, lived up to your expectations as someone who lived through the buildup?
I actually don't subscribe to WWE Network, so no, I have not been able to watch it.
Ah, okay. It's something else. It's something, you know, it's better than in a lot of ways, it's better than I expected. I was a little worried that, you know, the hype around it had to do with the fact that it had been lost and just hadn't been located. But it's something for me that actually, you know, it was definitely worth it for the subscription to finally see it. And so that, you know, I'm really curious for someone who kind of lived through the buildup and whatnot to know, you know, if it had lived up to what, you know, what they expected. Because for me, it was just this amazing kind of bloodbath. And I think the best part for me was Ole Anderson and Paul Ellering at the end. But that was even just as good as Tommy Rich and Buzz Sawyer. But
yeah, I believe for Paul Ellering, it was the first time they'd really put a manager in the cage also, wasn't it, to keep him from interfering.
That sounds right, yeah.
Yeah, so I'll YouTube it and go back and watch it, but I've just heard that that's one of the greatest matches in NWA history. Now, I don't know where it actually stands in the pantheon of matches, but I know it still gets a lot of talk even today, like you said.
Well, I queued it up on the network, and I'm looking at it now. I've got the sound down, but there's the cage. There's fencing on top of the cage and Buzz Sawyer pulling at the fencing, trying to get out, and you can see Paul Ellering hanging in a cage above the ring. Well, not above, off to the side a little bit, but yeah. It looks distinctive. It's definitely not I don't remember seeing anybody do a cage that exact way. So, yeah, it's interesting. And they got at the bottom, this event was originally recorded without announcers. So we're not going to get announcers, which is probably fine because I've seen some of the old DVDs back a decade ago when the WWE decided to put announcers underneath old matches. And, you know, Todd Grisham calling New Japan, probably not the best move, as I noted at the time.
I agree. Well, I look forward to hear what some of the other callers saw who have actually seen the match. And thank you for your time.
Hey, no problem. Glad to do it. All right, Brian drops off. That opens up a line for you, 515-605-9345. Let's see. Yeah, I mean, a lot of it, I think, you know, had to do with the buildup of the match. It had to do with the fact that there, you know, from what I heard, there was a lot of blood. This was definitely the high point in both of their careers. You know, Buzz Sawyer, Buzz Sawyer, not considered the nicest guy ever. He died at the age of 32. Tommy Rich. Tommy Rich never really got to the main event level outside of Georgia.
Well, he did end up with the WCW six-man tag team championship. So
that's true.
Cheap plug.
Yeah, I shouldn't. I shouldn't disregard that. Yeah.
Ring of Honor will be introducing its first six-man tag team championships coming up on our pay-per-view on September 30th, All-Star Extravaganza 8. But Buzz, the most interesting thing about Buzz Sawyer to me is his quick cup of coffee he had in WWF. And I believe it was 1985, right around the time of the first WrestleMania. Somebody can surely correct me, but
they were hiring everybody. So,
he was a blink and you'll miss him guy. He was on, Superstars 1. Seemed
Hello?
To be gone the next.
Yeah. All right. I think I lost phone connection for a second there, but I think we're good. Let's go ahead and take another call. We're going to go to the 240 area code. 240, please state your name and town. You're on Saturday Morning Wrestling. Well, there we go.
Ryan.
Hello.
This is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland.
Hello, Ryan. How you doing?
Good. My question for Ian is a Ring of Honor question. Do you know what Mandy Leanne is doing when she does the triangle with the eye? A lot of people think that's the Illuminati, but does that mean something else?
Yeah. So Mandy's very mysterious, and I do think perhaps that's some of the imagery that she's trying to convey. I do think maybe it does have to do with the all-seeing eye. Mandy is very proud of her background she incorporates a lot of the nomadic type spirit and things into her character.
We call
to
that
say for sure.
I'm sorry.
To say for sure, I don't know for sure, but I do know that that's I've watched YouTube videos. I do know that that's the symbol of the all-seeing eye as well. And I'll have to ask her about that. That's a great question. And I know it's on her shirts as well on Pro Wrestling Tees. And I've known Mandy for so long now that I never had thought to ask her about it. But it's definitely something that it's an interesting part of who she is. So.
Yeah, and also he's not giving out Mandy's cell phone network. We've all asked after that. So, I'm sorry.
Oh,
Ryan.
You think she gave it to me? No, I don't even have it. So,
okay. Well, there you go. All right. Next, anything else, Ryan?
Yeah, my second question is: do you see any other old school wrestlers coming to Ring of Honor besides Kevin Sullivan?
Oh man, so that's a great question. You know, Ring of Honor is an amazing locker room, and Kevin Sullivan has found a way to link himself up with BJ Whitmer and Steve Corino. And, my answer is I hope so. As strange as Kevin Sullivan can be, you can also learn quite a bit, from Kevin Sullivan. And it was definitely a personal career highlight to be able to do an interview with him, and call a match that he ended up being a part of on the pay-per-view. I know that in the past, Jerry Lynn has been a big part of our organization, both as a wrestler and as somebody who comes back. Perhaps he isn't as old school as Kevin Sullivan, but, I would hope so. We have a very inclusive locker room and we always welcome folks who come back. My favorite person that has come around a bit is Bobby Eaton. Just amazing, amazing guy. And he makes you feel like you're the biggest deal in the world. When for me and I was standing with Jay and Mark Briscoe, and we did a double take. It was, he was just walking by, and he was being introduced by the person that had brought him. And we just almost lost it. We thought it was the coolest thing in the world that Bobby Eaton came by. So every once in a while, some of the legendary folks, legendary wrestlers stop by and share some knowledge or just take in the show. You never know who's going to pop up, but, I certainly hope so, because I learned more from Bobby Eaton in 5 seconds than I had, in a couple months before that. So I certainly hope folks like Kevin Sullivan, Bobby Eaton, and so on continue to swing by.
Okay. Anything else, Ryan?
And my final question is, are you the only student that's threatening to walk out of Penn State over the Jay Paterno issue, or is there more than just you?
You know, I don't know for sure. I really respect Penn State as an educational institute, and all my experiences with the faculty and such have been great. And, you know, I wouldn't have selected Penn State for my post-grad stuff if I hadn't, you know, done my research and whatnot. I did see a few articles pop up in terms of other folks that may be thinking the same thing. But, you know, but at this time, you know, I'm just focused on my post-grad stuff. And I think I'll root for the University of Pennsylvania right now instead of Penn State. Because, you know, Penn's got a good shot, and that's my graduate alma mater. My undergrad alma mater, NYU, they don't have a football team. So they're leaving me empty at the altar. But yeah, I respect Penn State as an educational institute. I respect the football team as well. I just wish that, you know, they would recognize the accomplishments of maybe the students that had played on the football team instead.
Fair enough. Okay, Ryan.
Yeah, thanks, Pat. Thanks, Ian.
Oh, thank you.
No problem. All right, Ryan drops off. That opens up a line for you at 515-605-9345. We are due for another commercial timeout, and when we come back, we will talk some more about the hidden gems that are on the WWE Network, and more with Ian Riccoboni. Don't you go anywhere.
Do you shop at Amazon.com? If so, do you know there's a way for you to support the PW Torch livecast without doing anything different other than starting your shopping at pwtorch.com/Amazon? When you go to pwtorch.com/Amazon, click on the Amazon link and you land at the Amazon homepage. But anything you buy on that shopping trip, we get a commission for. It's a way to throw a few extra quarters, maybe a couple bucks in the tip jar, as a way to say thanks for what we do here at the PW Torch livecast. So next time you're about to shop at Amazon, don't type in AMAZ. Stop right there and type in PWTORCH.com/Amazon. That's PWTORCH.com/Amazon. A free, easy way to help support what we do here at the livecast. Thank you. When you're looking to tune in live to the PW Torch livecast, find out about the next episode, or just catch up on an episode you missed, go to our new website, pwtorchlivecast.com. You can select shows by specific day, specific host, and format, including a grid of our latest interviews and best of selections on the homepage. That is pwtorchlivecast.com, where you can stream our show live and listen to past shows on demand. That's pwtorchlivecast.com.
Hi, we're back with more Saturday Morning Wrestling here on pwtorchlivecast.com. Pat McNeil alongside Ring of Honor's Ian Riccoboni, who has nicely joined us for this special occasion. 515-605-9345. I'm going to check Twitter for you guys in a moment. Let's do a quick run-through, though, of everything that's in the Hidden Gems collection, some of which I didn't really think were hidden and some perhaps not gems. Let's see. First one is May 1951, Lou Thesz defending the NWA title against Ray Gunkel in Texas in a 2-out-of-3 falls match. Haven't watched that yet. Looks black and white to me. Seriously.
It does. And do you remember back in, I want to say the mid-90s or late 90s, ESPN Classic used to run
Yes. Lots
of old school wrestling, and I wonder where they got it from or if they still have any in their library. This looks and feels like one of those, which is kind of a good thing because, you know, a lot of that wrestling has almost been lost to time. And I'm not sure the circumstances surrounding this particular Lou Thesz match, but anytime you can, you know, you can see Lou Thesz, it's a real treat. So this one's on my watch list. I haven't been able to see it yet, but it's on my watch list for sure.
I know there's just a lot of wrestling to watch, both on the network and elsewhere. Ganya Metrics, the Vern Ganya Foundation for Physical Fitness. That's just fantastic. I can understand. I can understand why they included that. Oh,
this one's become a favorite of mine. I'm a big Ganya Metrics guy. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a question to email the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show about. He'll love talking about that. Gino Morella taking on Dave Rule from 1961. This is before This is before Gino was found wandering naked in a stream in Manchuria and became Gorilla Monsoon.
Right.
That was the story.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
yeah. It's a shame that Gino Morella guy was a nice gentleman from New Jersey, and then all of a sudden, you know, goes to Manchuria and look what happens.
That's what happens when you go to Manchuria. You saw that movie, The Manchurian Candidate.
Yep.
NWA titled Dory Funk Jr. versus Gene Kaniski. Pretty sure this is just what's left of that match, about 8 minutes or so from 1969. Let's see. Andre the Giant with impressive feats of strength. And, they've got all sorts of Andre stuff that they could probably put a 2 or 3 hour special together just with stuff like this. Watching Andre from this era, it doesn't really get old.
No, and he was so unique, and he still is so unique. And, his presentation, the way he carries himself, you know, there are people who are large and there are people who are, you know, giants, but no one quite has that same aura that Andre had.
Yeah, that's true. And, I don't see any 7-footers in the pipeline in developmental. I think that they, you know, if they find somebody, I think they're looking for somebody who actually has potential to wrestle well instead of and have a presence other than just being 7 feet tall. I think they've just given up on that idea. Let's see, Vince McMahon interviewing Muhammad Ali. This I have to watch. 19 minutes, it says.
Yeah, it looks like Classy Freddie Blassie's there as well. So that's kind of an interesting development.
Well, Muhammad Ali was a classy Freddie Blassie fan, so that makes sense.
What?
Roddy Piper and Jack Briscoe from Mid-Atlantic, 1982. Something that they've had,
did...
but I don't think. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I did catch this one.
Because it's in the, they have the Mid-Atlantic Library, and, you know, they haven't exactly gone out of their way to put up anything from the Mid-Atlantic Library either.
Strange, because, you know, we had a caller from Charlotte. We've had, you know, Charlotte hotbed, not sure, you know, I've been down to the NWA Legends Convention, NWA Legends Fest, and wrestling is still tremendously, you know, well-received in the Mid-Atlantic area, in the old Mid-Atlantic territory. You would think that they would, you know, be making an effort to put some of the stuff out, because for me, Roddy Piper, obviously at the top of my list of, you know, all-time great, all-time favorites. And Jack Briscoe, just because of, you know, the era that he wrestled, not a lot of stuff in clean quality footage is available. So I actually did watch this one. This one was a cool match I hadn't seen before. I think it's been available maybe through tape traders or other means, but I've never seen it, and it's real nice quality.
And a bunch of this stuff is on YouTube, too. But it's nice to see it in the good quality. That's part of the draw of the network, I think. Let's see here. Race and Backlund, 1980. They taped this match, but they never showed it on television because it, you know, didn't fit the narrative. I mean, I watched a good chunk of this, and it's obviously. I mean, Harley's doing his basic. Okay, I'm the heel champion. I'm going to make the babyface look good, and Backlund is Backlund. And
right.
Haven't gone through the whole thing, but yeah, that's amazing to see. Last Battle of Atlanta. Let's see, again, that's very good quality. Ric Flair versus Barry Windham, January 1987. I'm pretty sure this match has existed on YouTube, but again, you know, getting that original footage, yeah, that's huge.
It has, and I don't want to, I hope the statute of limitations have ran out, but back in the day when there used to be ways of seeing things that people were sharing as files.
Mm-hmm.
This was one of
long time ago. Yeah.
Long time ago. This was one of the rarer items that would pop up. Somebody graciously had uploaded this. So I've actually seen this match as well. And again, very, very much recommended. I haven't seen it in anything more than I think 100 by 200 letterbox.
Right.
So it's cool to actually be able to throw it up on the PlayStation or throw it up on the TV and see it.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of this stuff, I mean, some of the stuff you've seen on YouTube, but again, not quite the same quality. Undertaker versus Unabomber, Glenn Jacobs and Smoky Mountain. That's, yeah. I'm sure we'll get to check that out at some point. I'm pretty sure I've seen this one, the South Africa match between Bret Hart and Steve Austin, which both wrestlers, I think both wrestlers really talked about how well that match went. So it's not, you know, there wasn't any resistance, I guess, in getting this on the network.
Yeah, and I could have sworn some of this had aired, but maybe I'm just confusing it with other matches or the TV taping that they did, I think that one year in March, maybe March of 97. Because the venue in the background looks familiar, but perhaps this one has not aired yet. So that's pretty neat. I'll definitely be checking that out.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's see what else we have here. Oh, yeah, next, of course, Bret Hart versus Terry Funk, which, you know, if you've seen the show from Texas, or actually if you've seen, what's the one I'm thinking of, Beyond the Mat, right?
Yeah.
That's the show. That's the one, you know, that's the one Dennis Stamp wasn't booked for originally. Yeah, this is...
Main event, though.
Yes, and I'm guessing we don't get to see the lengthy argument backstage where both Bret Hart and Terry Funk refuse to win the match. But yeah, it's a good match. It's a lot of fun. From UPW, and I'm guessing they have UPW footage, which I don't know how much of it they have, but Ultimate Pro Wrestling, William Regal versus Samoa Joe.
Yeah, this one I didn't know existed. You know, and I'm a pretty big wrestling nerd, and I was aware of UPW. I believe that's where John Cena also came from. So
I think I reviewed one of their DVDs once in the Torch, but yeah, didn't know this match existed either.
So this is a real nice surprise for me. You know, it does look like it was shot on, you know, a step up above a camcorder, but it's really, really cool. You know, Joe had been through Ring of Honor, of course, and he came back in 2015. And, you know, to see kind of where he started from and to where he is now, it's a cool journey. And the amazing part is he must have been the best-kept secret in pro wrestling for quite some time.
Oh, yeah.
And I realized that when he got to Ring of Honor, he was already 5 or 6 years in. But I'm not sure what anybody was waiting for before that. You know, I realized he lived in California, and the big companies were in, you know, New York and Philly and Nashville at the time. But so maybe just transportation was expensive. But man, he had it for quite some time, you know, probably out of the gate. And it's just amazing to watch this and to see, you know, to see him back then, and then wonder why it kind of took so long, because he's just phenomenal guy.
Actually, there's pretty much a whole DVD full of Samoa Joe and UPW footage when they were still calling, when the announcers were calling him Samoan Joe for the first several matches. Yeah, so I'm not sure what the holdup was, but glad we're getting to see it. And finally, from Florida Championship Wrestling, Seth Rollins defending the FCW title against Cassius Ohno. And again, this is another thing where they have the FCW library. You've probably seen scattered episodes of FCW up on YouTube, but this is fun to watch. It's kind of like if you watch Chris Hero and Tyler Black in Ring of Honor, it's similar to that.
It is,
exactly the same.
What's always interesting to me was, you know, my brother lives in Orlando, so when I go to visit, this would air, I believe, on the remnants of the Sunshine Network, which I think became Fox Sports Orlando or Fox Sports something. And I used to catch this, and it was pretty fun. And then, but it's, yeah, like you mentioned, though, it's kind of just the next extension of something you may have seen in Ring of Honor, which is pretty neat. And I like the callbacks. I like all that kind of stuff. And, you know, Chris Hero, just phenomenal talent. You know, another guy that I personally would love to see back in Ring of Honor. He's doing really well for himself. He continues to do really well for himself in America and across the globe. But this is a fun match. I saw this actually when it aired. I'm glad that they put it up there, because it's pretty cool. It's a good match.
Actually, speaking of guys coming to Ring of Honor, the one I guess I should ask you about is Cody Rhodes supposed to be coming to the final battle in December this year.
He is, and that's a huge, huge, huge get and opportunity for Ring of Honor. You know, a guy as talented and as creative as Cody Rhodes, I'm looking forward to meeting him in New York. We returned to the Hammerstein Ballroom for the first time in, I believe, 3 years, And for our big seminal pay-per-view, Final Battle on December 2nd, you know, he can just bring so much to the table. Great wrestler. You know, you saw the different ways he could be creative with Stardust and with, you know, just the ways that, you know, he was able to be himself.
Dashing.
Yeah. Well, even that, you know, he's just a guy that is always running at, you know, 110%, and you can tell. And I'm curious to see, you know, who he's going to face in Ring of Honor. I mean, off the top of my head, I can list probably 15 or 20 opponents, and that he could have a great match with right out of the gate. And you know, the list goes on and on. You could, you know, he could conceivably compete for the ROH World Championship against Adam Cole. You know, Adam Cole was on the list. I don't know if you remember the list, but the list came out.
No, I remember the list. Yeah,
and Adam Cole was right there.
That would be something to see. I'm sure Adam Cole wouldn't mind that.
No, not at all. And you know, him versus Jay Lethal, him versus Jay Briscoe, versus Mark Briscoe, Christopher Daniels, Frankie Kazarian. You know, put him in a tag team match, put him against the Young Bucks, War Machine. The possibilities are endless. This is just an amazing, you know, an amazing thing that, you know, he's coming to Ring of Honor.
Okay, we have to take our last time out of the day. When we come back, we will have more of your calls at 515-605-9345. Email questions, questions from the chat room, questions from Twitter. It just doesn't matter. We are here for you. Saturday Morning Wrestling rolls on after this timeout.
If you're a fan of the PW Torch livecast, you might want to consider a PW Torch VIP membership. When you do that, you get access to an exclusive RSS feed of not only ad-free, plug-free versions of every single PW Torch livecast, but also over 50 other VIP exclusive podcasts per month, including the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline. I also host three other flagship VIP exclusive podcasts: The Midweek Fix with Todd Martin, The Weekend Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, each about 2 hours in length, and the post pay-per-view roundtables with a 1 hour analysis of every WWE pay-per-view and some other ones too. Also, ad-free access to PWTorchVIP.com, and that is mobile-friendly and PC and desktop-friendly, and also access to almost three decades of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, dating back to the late 1980s, over 1,400 back issues, with my pay-per-view reports on every single pay-per-view match since the late 1980s, with star ratings and match descriptions, roundtable reviews from the staff on every pay-per-view, cover stories on the biggest story every single week in pro wrestling, march through them as a VIP member 1 week at a time, read our exclusive Torch Talks with pro wrestling's biggest names, hard-hitting editorials, backstage tidbits you will not hear anywhere else, and much more. It's all available. Check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Exclusive podcasts, exclusive new newsletters every week, ad-free access to our website, and access to 28-plus years of archives. It's all waiting for you if you go VIP. Find out more details, a checklist of all the benefits of being a VIP member, along with testimonials from current members and a sign-up form that's mobile-friendly. It takes about 90 seconds to sign up. Go check it out today, pwtorch.com/govip.
All right, hang on there, Ian. I have to do this here just for a moment. Thank you. Hey, kids, let's talk about our sponsor at Loot Crate, lootcrate.com. Loot Crate is a monthly subscription box service for epic geek and gamer items and pop culture gear. For less than $20 a month, you get 6 to 8 items that include licensed gear, apparel, unique one-of-a-kind items, and more. As a matter of fact, let's look at this month's Loot Crate. This month's theme is speed, which means you will get over $45 worth of value. Exclusive items from the following franchises: Arrow, The Flash, Iron Man 2, Battlestar Galactica, Batman, and yes, believe it or not, Gone in 60 Seconds. I didn't even know Gone in 60 Seconds was a franchise, but there you go. Gone in 60 Seconds. It's all on Loot Crate. You head over to lootcrate.com. You have until the 19th at midnight Eastern to subscribe and receive that month's box. After that happens, that's it. It's over. You hope there are some leftovers. There's a T-shirt in every big Loot Crate box. There's other Loot Crate options for you every month, including Loot Crate DX, and coming soon, the WWE Slam Crate as part of the Loot Crate brand. So I don't miss it. It's lootcrate.com. back on Saturday Morning Wrestling with Ian Riccoboni of Ring of Honor. 515-605-9345 is how you reach us. Ian, one other thing I wanted to get to, which is also on the network, also been added over the past couple weeks. I don't think it's gotten the attention that maybe it deserves. WWE Network has gone to has went and added the first few ECW television shows from 1993 before Paul Heyman had anything to do with the product. Let's see, first episode taped at Cabrini College, Jimmy Snuka, the Super Destroyers, Hot Stuff, Eddie Gilbert, the Kodiak Bear, and of course the Rock and Rebel. You can't have this. You can't have the ECW without the Rock and Rebel. The Suicide Blondes.
You're bringing me back into a time machine. My very first pro wrestling show was a ECW type show in the town of Cape May Courthouse, not to be confused with Cape May Courthouse, New Jersey.
Right.
And it had featured a lot of the early ECW stars. Interestingly enough, it had, it had Sandman, it had Crybaby Waldo, who would turn up on a couple of the early ECW shows. It also had the Heavenly Bodies, which was pretty cool, and it also had Jim Cornette, and 1-2-3 Kid, who at the time was Lightning Kid, and Jerry Lynn were on that show as well. I still have the program. I still have the printout piece of paper. So it wasn't an ECW proper show, but it was around the same time period, and they were using a lot of the same fellas. I think it might have been 1992. These early 1993 ECW shows are pretty cool because a lot of folks, they think that ECW out of the gate was pretty innovative and things like that. But, it wasn't until, Paul Heyman kind of inserted himself and, there was some cool things happening with Joel Goodhart and things like that on the East Coast where, the Terry Funk Cactus Jack matches. But some of these early ECW shows are just a combination of names and former stars. And then you don't start to really see the influx of new talent until 1994 when you get guys like Sabu, Taz. You start to see Rob Van Dam in, I think, mid-95 when some of the luchadors come through.
Yeah.
So, some of these are interesting just from a fan perspective to see what it grew out of. But if you're expecting, mid-1997 or 1998 ECW, you might be disappointed when you watch these shows.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I love 1995 ECW. I've still got a whole bunch of them in the VHS box and storage. But, yeah, that was an interesting time when people were less than enamored of what they were seeing from WCW and WWF. That's how ECW caught hold. And, of course, if you've been following the past couple of weeks, they've dumped a whole bunch of NWA TBS stuff from the late 80s, 87, 88, 89. Those are up on the network, and we're all kind of excited about seeing those again. So a lot of good stuff.
And, the nerd in me, there's a very famous preempted edition of Saturday Night that I hope that they're able to put on. And I know the 1 week TBS actually aired the wrong Saturday Night. They aired one that had already aired. So I'm hoping the quote unquote missing episode finally turns up from Saturday Night. So,
I would think they'd have access to all of these, and I think the key is that we're going to get all of these. What Joey Styles said before they fired him, we're going to get all these eventually. I think is the word.
Right.
Yeah, because I understand it takes a certain amount of time to get all of these in the ECW's case to wipe out the original music that they don't have the rights for, I know it's a time consuming process. I get upset though when there's stuff that I know they have because it was on when they did WWE 24/7 and we haven't seen it yet. There's plenty of old stuff from the Garden and the Spectrum from back in the day that are there that we're still waiting on. And I think there's enough stuff that they can be uploading pretty much forever.
Right. Well, maybe that's the strategy, maybe time it out. I know with Ring of Honor's ringside membership, we do have quite a bit. We have all the HDNet shows, and then we kind of stagger out some of the other older things. We just re-added ROH Goes Ultraviolet, which is pretty cool. If you become a ringside member, you can get a discount on that. So we kind of stagger things in a way that, so you can't see everything at once. But, I'm wondering if that's the same thing, maybe so that they don't burn out their viewers, because if I took a week off from work, I would probably just sit home and watch, you know, I'd sit home and watch the network and watch the ringside membership stuff and just veg out. So I could blow through probably 100 hours of this stuff and no problem.
I'm married. I can't do that anymore. But, yeah, I get the – I understand. I understand completely.
Trust me.
All right, 515-605-9345. We also we also didn't really get to talk much about B shows. Now, ECW, they would do shows, and they would sort of stagger who got left off the house shows. So you'd get to see, you know, maybe two or three of the what you consider the top guys wouldn't make it. And, I mean, that and the fact that they weren't running 7 days a week is how they managed to keep the talent, you know, somewhat fresh, because that was a very high-impact style there.
Right.
Let's see, I'm trying to do you remember, but any WWF or WCW shows where you got to see, you know, not necessarily Hulk Hogan stand out?
So the big one that comes to mind, I went to the Allentown Fairgrounds in 1991, and this was after they had stopped taping TV there. This was the very famous Ag Hall, though, and they actually did an outdoor show at the fairgrounds, and it was Big Boss Man and the Mountie in a steel cage, and that was actually an awesome, really fun match. But I remember I was really, like, confused and disappointed because I have the results up, and I remember there being so many switches and things like that. So they had announced Coco Beware versus Paul Roma. And Paul Roma, this was September, and so Paul Roma had just left. So it became Coco Beware versus the Brooklyn Brawler. And then it was supposed to be IRS versus Jim Neidhart. They did a thing where Jim Neidhart had been figured forward to death by Ric Flair on TV. They did IRS versus Tony Atlas, who had been gone for a good 9 months by that point. And then I got to see the rare combination of the new rockers, Marty Jannetty and Jim Powers. Shane Douglas had been filling in, but we got Jim Powers versus Pat Tanaka and Colonel Mustafa. And then we were supposed to see Jim Duggan versus Sid Justice. I remember being pumped about Sid, but he got switched out for Typhoon. So we got a very interesting B card. That was my first ever WWF show. Yeah, some of the other B cards I'd seen in 2001, I went to see a WWF show at Stabler Arena, or I believe 2002 rather, and there was a fella named Ross McCullough. And it was the first and only time I'd seen him. He was a 7-footer. He faced Tommy Dreamer. I think he beat Tommy Dreamer. And just a very cool presence, you know, legit 7-foot guy. But he just kind of came and went. So B shows were kind of neat because, you know, as a wrestling nerd, I kind of go through all the results. And you'll see guys like Russ McCullough kind of pop up and, you know, here today, gone tomorrow, kind of thing. And you kind of wonder, why they were there, why they weren't, you know. In the 80s, Brickhouse Brown was a guy that seemed to pop up on WWF B shows and C shows all the time, but he was always kind of a mainstay somewhere else. So it's always interesting to see things like that.
All right, I'm looking through the first B show I remember. Capital Center, Landover, Maryland, July 27th, 1990. Quite the main event, Hacksaw Jim Duggan and Tugboat defeated Earthquake and Dino Bravo. That because Duggan and Tugboat were trying to avenge the injury to Hulk Hogan. You'll recall that one from
the
hands of the Earthquake and Dino Bravo. Yes, the match that I remember enjoying a lot was Demolition beating the Hart Foundation, long match. The Bill Eadie at ringside for Smash and Crush, and the Big Boss Man beat Ted DiBiase. That's good. Now the rest of the show, the African Dream Akeem defeating Pez Watley, yay. Paul Roma defeating Paul Diamond. Dustin Rhodes, a rare appearance for him. This is before he actually debuted on WWF TV. Defeated Playboy Buddy Rose and the Warlord over Sam Houston. All right.
And Sam Houston wasn't really doing too many shots with WWF at that time. So that's kind of neat.
No. And I'm looking at this on the history of WWE right now. Yeah, the A show was Warrior and Rude at the Sports Arena in Los Angeles with there's probably a bunch of people I would have rather seen. So there you go.
Well, it's interesting too, because the, you know, as you get closer and as you move forward in time, 1991, you know, Allentown and Lehigh Valley got the B show. 1994, things have kind of condensed and business slowed down, so we were getting A shows. And all of a sudden,
yeah.
The first TV taping I was ever at, I'm just looking at the results again. We had Lex Luger versus Crush. We had Razor Ramon versus Diesel. We had Bret Hart versus Owen Hart for the, you know, for the championship.
Everything, yeah.
We also had to sit through, you know, we had to sit through four episodes of enhancement matches, but you know, we got to see all the stars. And it's interesting how 85 they started to run, you know, some more B shows. 86 they ran a lot and added kind of a C team into 87. At one point there was like a D team, which were some of the high school
yeah,
shows, the sold shows. And yeah, and then it, as you kind of get closer back to the Attitude Era, it kind of slows back down, and some of the towns like Allentown, who used to get, you know, quote unquote A shows in 83, were starting to get the A shows again in 94. So
it all it all comes around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it does. Okay, let's see. I went to Clemson, you know, here in South Carolina, and obviously at that point, you know, near a lot of WCW television tapings. Unfortunately, it was probably the wrong time to be at, you know, to be in that area. But I'm trying to pull the one that we went to while basically all the other wrestlers were in Europe. They scheduled a TV taping, Anderson, South Carolina. Oh, they don't have the results on it. But yeah, everybody was in Europe. Luger, Sting, the Steiners, Rick Rude. I'm trying to remember the main event. I think it was something like, let's see. I think Steve Austin was holding down the fort, and I think it was Steve Austin and Bobby Eaton with Medusa, and I'm trying to find who the opponents. It was Big Josh and somebody. Yeah.
Nice.
Anyway, yeah, not good times, I'm going to say.
One of the shows I went to in Bethlehem, the WCW show. It's funny you mentioned that. The main event was Sting versus Bam Bam Bigelow, which was awesome. It was a lot of fun.
Fantastic.
I was a big Sting guy, but yeah, if you look down the rest of the show though, the rest of the card rather, you start to wonder where everybody else was compared to who they were showing on TV. It would be, you know, one of those moments. You know, maybe if I was a parent and I knew that, you know, my son or daughter really liked a few of their top stars, beyond Sting and Bam Bam Bigelow, you didn't get to see a lot of the as seen on TV type guys. So, you know, that's something. You know, we had another, you know, the last show in Bethlehem, the main event was Lex Luger versus Van Hammer.
Wow.
And that was also the same card that Jim Duggan and had found the television championship in the trash, and he had been carrying around doing open challenges. So we saw, I think, three matches. I know he defended against Steve Regal, which was cool, especially considering his history with the championship. But also, you know, we saw him defeat Robert Gibson, which was again, considering at the time that Goldberg was signed, Hulk Hogan, Randy Savage, Kevin Nash, Scott Hall, Bret Hart, Sting. The main event was Van Hammer versus Lex Luger, and the signature match was Jim Duggan versus Robert Gibson for the television championship. So, yeah, some of these B shows are fairly interesting.
Yeah. I think I wrote a column on it back in the day. I went to a SmackDown house show. This is in D.C. in 2003, and I'm gonna pull it up here in a little while. This was at the or 2004. This was at the time when there were several parents there who didn't understand the whole concept of the brand split, and were wondering where all the people that their kids wanted to see had gone to.
Yeah,
so,
that's the part, and I mean nothing in disrespect to Jim Duggan and Robert Gibson.
Right.
It's just, you know, oftentimes they don't put Jim Duggan and Robert Gibson on the poster. They put Sting,
no.
Goldberg, Nash, Hall, Hogan. And so as you advertise for that and then you get something a little bit different, that can be disappointing. And, you know, that's if you're the brand split too, I think oftentimes wrestling fans, we forget that we're kind of in our own bubble and that we really understand the minutiae of what's happening in the story. And sometimes for parents who are taking their kids who also understand the minutiae, it can be disappointing, more disappointing for the parents. Sometimes the kid ends up loving it. I loved every wrestling show I went to, no matter who was on the show. But some of the parents are wondering where Hulk Hogan is. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, SmackDown DC, June 21st, 2003. Not only is it a SmackDown house show, but Brock Lesnar's not there.
That's strange.
Yeah, so, he was off the whole weekend for some reason. Yeah, that's not popular. So, no Triple H, no Kevin Nash, no Randy Orton, Booker T, none of those guys. You did get a main event of Kurt Angle and Chris Benoit winning a handicap match over Big Show, Charlie Haas, and Shelton Benjamin.
Hmm.
Okay then. And I don't know how I forgot this, but Billy Gunn defeating John Cena.
Wow, isn't it fun to see stuff like that?
Yeah. I can imagine. Yeah, Billy Gunn. Okay, kid, here's what we're going to do. That must have been. Well, you know, I mean, people, you can't say that John Cena didn't pay his dues. I mean, in as much as people do these days, you know?
Well, was that when Billy Gunn was with Nydia after he fought Jamie Noble, or is that right before that?
I don't know. I mean, look here. This is a good question you ask. Now, Billy Gunn's still with Tori Wilson at this point.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if they did the skit where all four of them, they feud with Jamie Noble and Nydia, and all four of them end up in bed together, which was the craziest ending
of all time. That was the least probable thing I expected to happen.
Yes, the good news is, you know, not as many people saw it as perhaps you wanted to. Oh, here's something. SmackDown House Show, Augusta, Maine, June 29th, 2003. Apparently, they filled time by having Vince McMahon as a guest on the Brother Love show.
What? Wow. He was killed. He was
June 29th, 2003.
Well, I guess 12 years is enough time to recover. So I guess he might have been healed by then. But oh my goodness, something I didn't know that happened. I didn't know Brother Love returned after the Ultimate Warrior beat him, but I'm using control F here on History of WWE, and sure enough, he was in the that Battle Royal with the APA with the Easter Bunny and Sean O'Hare and the Conquistadors. They were in that one as well.
And on that note, we're about out of time for this week. I want to thank Ian Riccoboni for joining us. Next week, I'll be filling in for Jim again. Bruce Mitchell has threatened to drop by, and we'll see how that goes. And Ian, I'm hoping we'll get you to join us, and we might do a Real Deal audio segment for the VIP members. Thank you to everybody who listened, and thank you, Ian. Really appreciate everybody coming out on a Saturday. Don't forget Torch Backlash. Yeah, Torch Backlash coverage all night tomorrow night. You can't escape it. So we'll be doing that. And Ian, Pittsburgh, I think this coming weekend, next weekend.
Yeah, Pittsburgh, and then Lockport, New York. We're going to be in Pittsburgh Friday night, September 16th. Huge main event: Adam Cole and the Young Bucks versus Jay Lethal, Colt Cabana, and Dalton Castle. The next night, we're going to be in Lockport. It's going to be Colt Cabana, Dalton Castle versus the Briscoes, the IWGP Heavyweight Tag Team Champions. But also, Honor Rumble comes back. In Lockport, winner gets a title shot at Lakeland, Florida, and a huge Women of Honor tag team match that I'm looking forward to. Deonna Purrazzo, keep her name in mind, and Mandy Leon versus Taylor Hendricks and the debuting Jessica Havoc.
I like it.
Big Women of Honor tag team match there. So tickets still available, but they're going fast, ROHWrestling.com.
All right, thanks, everybody. We will see you next week.
Well, there you have it, folks. Another happy ending from the good people at Jimmy James Incorporated.
But the most amazing thing to me is I get paid for doing this.
Gosh, it just seems like yesterday I tricked Brie Bella into believing she was eating meat. That sweet little girl never did find out. It was actually cat food.
Sit, Ubu, sit. Good dog.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.